Hello everyone, welcome to the latest episode of the SaaS Sessions podcast. We are on the seventh season now, and today we have Eric Newton with us on the show. Eric is currently the CMO at Hubilo. Hubilo is a leading event tech platform company. Prior to Hubilo, he was the VP of marketing at Milestone. Eric is a growth marketing executive who takes full lifecycle view of customer acquisition, experience, and retention. So, hey Eric, such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Hi Sunil, great to be here.
Great. So today with Eric, since he takes care of, you know, full lifecycle view of customer acquisition, experience, and retention, and there is an important aspect in you know, all these three stages, which is particularly about lead nurturing. So today we are going to discuss the art of lead nurturing with Eric. So before we get into that, Eric, I gave a very short intro about you, but why don't you introduce yourself and tell us about your journey into the SaaS ecosystem?
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm the CMO at Hubilo now. And as you said, Hubilo is a virtual events and webinar platform that helps customers accelerate their pipeline. And nurturing the events and webinars are a critical component of nurturing because you're creating an event and that creates a little bit of variation in what people, the kind of information people are getting from you, how they engage with you, and the depth of their engagement. So that's why we think it's such a critical part of the marketing stack and the marketing mix. My journey into this job, you know, I've been a couple decades as a marketer, and I've just never been happier in my life than to be the CMO. It's kind of what I've worked for my whole life. I started out in an ad agency in Tokyo. And then I worked in various Silicon Valley tech companies, started more B2C and more recently B2B. And I like both functions in marketing. B2B has a more reality about it because the deals are bigger and the pipeline is more visible. When you work in B2C, you spend a lot of money and you know you look at your metrics, but you don't track individual consumers buying a $10 a month subscription to Netflix, for example. But when you're selling $10,000 or $50,000 B2B software, everything you do as marketing matters quite a bit. So the programs you run, the content you create, and the degree to which you collaborate with sales all makes a big difference. So all of those skills, I've been in each of the marketing functions, you know, for a time. I've run every function or managed every function. And all of that gives me kind of the preparation to do this CMO and leadership job now.
Interesting. And since you mentioned about the importance of like lead nurturing, and you know, when you're selling a B2B software versus a B2C software, when you're selling a high ticket software, like $10,000 a year, and you have to make sure, like, you know, if some lead comes, it's not going to close in 2 days. It's going to take, let's say, a month or 2 months for a B2B sales cycle to close, right? So in that 2 month period, you have to engage the lead, right? In this case, and that's what exactly the topic mentions about lead nurturing, right? So can you explain like what, in what ways we can nurture a lead and probably like a customer as well, if we're retaining them, and why it is so important to do that in B2B?
Yeah, sure. So as we engage a community, as we build community as a marketer, we might have 25 to 50,000 people on our list over a couple of years. We, you know, we can acquire that list. We can go to trade shows. We have people signing up for things on our website. We're creating webinars. All of these things lead us to have a list to communicate with. But the reality is that 98, 99% of that list is not currently today, this week, in market or in final decision stages about getting a particular type of software or a particular solution. So, you know, they might have a competing solution, but odds, I mean, statistically, they're within 11 months from renewal or, you know, deciding whether they're going to switch out. And, you know, statistically, probably they're within a couple of months of that decision, as particularly as they get active in a community that is discussing those kind of options. So 99% of your list is not currently in your pipe. Now, it might have gone through your pipe, it might have gone through demo, and it might be back in your pipe. But these are all the different opportunities to nurture. Now, the big problem with 99% of 50,000. So you've got 49,000 plus who are all different groups. You got to think about them as cohorts. So think about you can think about industry cohorts, but it's better to think about use case cohorts. What mm-hmm. do people need your product for? And the truth is most marketers will do similar things with your product, but the priority in which they think about how they're going to use their product is going to be a little bit different. Somebody mm-hmm. in the finance industry might care a lot about doing an interactive calculator. Say, let's say that's something you offer. Somebody in the marketing industry would be really interested in the demo, how it demos your software. Tracking requirements and the lingo might be a little bit different by industry, but the use case is going to be the same. So what are the primary use cases that people are looking for? Another segmentation you can do is, how did these people get into your list? That gives you a clue of where they are and what they'd be interested in. So for example, did you meet them at a live trade show? Did they come to your summit? Have they come to your webinar? Do they subscribe to your newsletter? And being able to cohort those 99% into different experiences is going to give you the ability to personalize the automation. Mm-hmm. And you know, the another segmentation, so there's use case and there's where they are in the funnel, top of funnel, middle of funnel, bottom of funnel. So tofu, mofu, and bofu for in the vernacular, if you know the expressions. So top of funnel content is going to be something that's going to be short, crisp, and a little bit catchy. So what I like to use at the top of the funnel is content that is research, that you have a breakthrough statistic, a breakthrough benchmark, something like 82% of leads never get worked by sales. You know, that gets a marketer's attention because there's always so much pressure to generate leads, but, you know, or I did a poll recently and I found that about 75% of people in the poll were not happy with their nurture program, that they either didn't have nurture or they weren't happy with how it was running. Use that as a statistic and get that into, say, the subject line to show the people in your database, in your community, that you've got value to add and value to share. That's a top of funnel tactic. Thoughts on that, Sunil?
No, totally. I think if to anybody, right, like purchasing any software or anybody who's selling any software, selling with that, I don't want to say like fear, but, you know, addressing that pain point particularly, like, really catches the attention, right? Like if somebody comes to me and say that, you know, hey, you are losing like 20% of your leads just because somebody, you know, like maybe the form is not correctly filled, or maybe you're losing leads on that or something like that on my website. So that's going to keep me up, right? So, and if I get an email that, you know, hey, you can increase your website conversion ratio of any form by X percentage, and, you know, and this is how we do it. So that's something interesting. Like, I would open the email, I would go through it, maybe click on the link and, you know, maybe like double click a little on the topic.
Right. You bring up another good kind of content, and that is case study. So near the upper middle is when you want to start bringing in third-party validation. You want to say customers like you, customers in your industry, customers with your use case had this problem and we solved it this way. They got this result. People like to get that point of reference.
Yeah, totally. And getting this information delivered to, like, you know, somebody who is just on the brink of conversion, right, is vital, right? And that's what I think lead nurture programs would solve for. So can you tell us, like, some of the programs like that you've built in the past, and what exactly should, like, a lead nurture program constitute of?
Yeah, I mean, we just started talking about tofu, but so before we jump off into building programs, let's do a little bit of mofu and bofu. So an example of mofu in middle of the funnel would be building community. And building community can be, you know, giving people a chance to interact with each other. You could do a mixer, you could do a panel, you could do a webinar, you could have multiple people on a podcast, you know, you could interact with the audience a little bit more. That brings people closer to you. So you can combine real-time events with recorded events, in real-life events with digital events. You know, the digital events are going to give you more scale, allow you to reach more people. They're more accessible for people who are out of your area, for example. And then bottom of funnel content is typically going to be something like ROI calculators or total cost of ownership calculators. When people are getting a little bit more serious about the calculations involved in that in their process. So as you can identify people have been with you and engaging your content, you want to have your marketing automation logic be advancing them a little bit farther downstream to this kind of content comparison, you know, benchmark comparison versus your competitors, these kind of things.
But it, like, and based on, since you mentioned marketing automation, right? Like, I believe like it should be like running these like nurture sequence programs or nurture programs. I believe like marketing automation would play a very vital role to like, you know, understand like where, since you mentioned about earlier, you talked about the industry versus like the use cases versus what stage of the funnel the prospect or the customer is in. And are they like, you know, just about to churn, or maybe, you know, they have a low adoption of the product or something like that. So all this data is present in one platform, and then your marketing automation platform would have access to that. And based on the data, like you're like, you know, sequencing or building the program, right? So it does play a vital role in building the program. But according to you, like, how have you used a marketing automation program in the past, and for what exactly that you have used it for, and like maybe to identify like, you know, prospects in different stages, or maybe to lead score them, or maybe to, you know, just send emails or just send some notifications in some sort of way. So how have you used in your experience?
So if you think about how you're going to build your marketing automation program, the first thing you need to think about is your platform. And if you're a small company and, you know, you could use most of the, even the less expensive software, have the ability to sequence and time your content. But the more sophisticated platforms for enterprise are Marketo and Eloqua. Those two are the leading ones. So those have more logic. They can build more sophisticated systems. They can be more dynamic with your campaign. So your campaign has branch logic. You build the basic tree, and then you create experiences for people that are going through your process and engage them with hopefully better and more targeted and more engaging content as you go based on what they have or haven't done. That's the first thing. The second thing is lead scoring, which is a topic that's been around for a long time, and it's really hard to get it right. And you know, the danger with getting your lead scoring is if you don't have statistics, if you don't have a lot of data to correlate these actions are correlating with going down funnel, going to pipeline and becoming a customer, you're going to end up doing a little bit of guessing. So I would set the bar a little bit lower on the lead score before I would call something more ready to go to sales a little bit sooner than a high bar, because you've already got 99% of people not in market, or 98. You do want the experience to be changing to a more human and manual nurture that's going on in that sales business development process sooner. So your lead scoring has to do with how ready this person is to get a demo. And if you are really strict about how ready they are, you're going to train your salespeople to cherry pick and only want the people who are requesting a demo. Obviously, that person's ready. But what you're doing in that case is you're probably using media dollars. If you're having a person enter at this high value and you're not running a nurture program, you're paying Google essentially, or you're paying the world to nurture your lead and say, I see signals here. Maybe you're using Sixth Sense, which is a good but expensive software, to find leads that are ready and easier for your salespeople to convert. Now, the opportunity numbers-wise is everything below that. Things that are, let's say that's a 60 lead score is request a demo, they're ready to move down funnel. Then you have your 5, 10s, 20s, and 30s, and your 5 might be I downloaded a white paper. In my experience, people who are downloading information like that and aren't engaged in a workflow or not engaged in a marketing automation cadence with you, they're fairly low intent. They're interested in that particular information. Good news is, you know, maybe you've got an email address, but you have to work up from that 5 or 10 to a 20 and a 30. And what we found as we looked at the data is that of the marketing leads that went down funnel, they typically came to a live event and open multiple other three or more emails. So it's that combination and that variation of what you're doing in your program So while we're saying we're going to send them email, what we mean is email is the vehicle in which to invite them to multiple experiences with us, reading mm-hmm. content, interacting with content, using the website, being in a community event, going to a webinar, asking a question, using chat. All of those are good signals that are fives and tens that we can use to get up to that about a 50 and get it to a 50. Then that cohort becomes fresh leads that we would batch up and move downstream. This one's ready to go. Now, the trick here is not to have that fall in a hole, because your salespeople, if they're, you need a lot of teamwork and coordination as you pass these things off so that they don't hit a wall, because marketing didn't go out there and necessarily qualify on BANT, budget, authority, need, and timing. Marketing typically doesn't do that. Marketing showing intent and interest, the next layer down in that BDR outreach cycle, needs to check on budget, authority, need, and timing. But if they're expecting a request to demo and they get one of these, a nurtured lead that has been, the demand has been manufactured, then they're not going to be as comfortable and successful in addressing it. The other thing I've been finding, Sunil, and tell me if you and your other speakers have found the same, is that the number of touches required has gone up significantly in the last 5 years, particularly post-COVID.
Totally.
That marketing, there's a lot of email competition, and not a lot of your email doesn't break through, or it might not be getting into the inbox. It might be going to the other box, which is a problem. And marketing needs 20 to 30 touches. You need to see that somebody's read your subject line, at least previewed your emails. And you can't give up too soon. Don't say that this is an inactive person too easily if you haven't given it 20 or 30 attempts at outreach. Now, as you pass that lead off to the BDR group, then they need to do 20 or 30 touches. It's no longer 7 or 8. I mean, 10, 20 years ago, marketing used to say it takes 7 or 8 communications to break through a message. The deluge of message coming at all of our prospects out there has gone up geometrically in the last 20 years. So you need to ratchet up the quality of what you're doing and the frequency. Make sure you don't give up too soon in any of your digital conversations or in your live conversations.
No, totally. I mean, I'm not sure like about the other speakers, but I have totally seen the number of touches go up. And as you rightly mentioned, right, like if anybody who's running any sort of sequencing or nurturing programs, and if those touches like hit 15 or 20, and they should just not give up. I mean, I think Gartner or, these leading like researchers or who research about a lot of these buyer journey and buyer behaviors, they have said like, it's even upwards of, 35, 40, when there are like 6 to 10 like buying members or buying committee that are involved, right? Like here we might be talking about just one person, but when it's a B2B sale, it's like, usually like on an average 6 people as per Gartner who are involved in like, purchasing any B2B software. So definitely if you like add the touches for each person, it's definitely upwards of 100, right? So people should not give up.
I would agree that closing a SaaS software deal between the three groups, between the marketing group, the business development outreach group, and the AEs, you're going to be in for 30 touches each. So you're right. You're going to be north of 100 to pull a deal across the line.
Totally.
And any of the three of us who gives up sooner than that, you're going to be, your yield is going to be underperforming for the pipe, either the top of funnel, middle funnel, bottom funnel pipeline. That's definitely an interesting point.
And just like adding the number of people, it kind of brings another, variable in the matrix. So earlier you talked about industry and then use cases and then like stage in which the deal is in, but just when it becomes a B2B deal, and there are 6 people involved, the nurturer should also consider the persona of, to which who you are sending, because yes, you have, personalized it based on the industry, you have personalized it based on the use case, and then the stage they're in. But what if like, you're talking to like an admin and sales ops person, so you don't want to sound the same to both of them, right? Or you're talking to like a VP of sales versus a sale and a sales ops. So again, like different problems and different messaging, right? So that's just how like complex it has become in today's world to, you know, be even relevant in selling a B2B software. And that's why, as you mentioned, right, like it's become very vital and important to run these nurture sequences. Like it is definitely complex, but it is also, you know, a very helpful way and to, you know, to bridge the gaps that are there. And, you know, if somebody has just gone cold, you can just reactivate them, like probably like you send a mass email, which is personalized and contextualized, obviously, to somebody. And you never know, like, you know, they just open the email and they register for a webinar and boom, like they're active, right? So it works wonders. Like I've sharing it from my personal experience, at least.
Yeah, I mean, what you're talking about there has been covered over the years as the challenger sale and the challenger customer, that the number of people involved in a buy has doubled from about two point eight to 4 or 5. And as you say, 6, Gartner seeing 6 people involved. So creating content for different buyers is important. If you don't have access to the finance buyer, or you don't, you know, in the middle of the cycle, you're typically not with the finance persona, you get to them usually later as they try to negotiating price and getting into terms. But you need to think about, is there any information, if you have identified a champion, if your marketing POC is your champion, you need to provide them information that's interesting to them and information that they can use. And maybe part of your nurture can even suggest that here's how people persuade finance people to support investments like this, or, you know, these kind of solutions. So that's another type of content, but that goes back to the segmentation. If you're investing in your data, your data is really clean and fresh. You've got the current finance, the controller, you've got those titles mapped correctly. You should be able to start addressing some content there as you go down funnel. You might be able to start an automated outreach to them, to that buyer, to help soften the resistance to getting the final step through on your contract.
Totally. So yeah, like Eric, if can you share some examples of lead nurture programs that you have run in the past?
Yeah, sure. So at Milestone, we did heavy industry focus. So we were a hotel focused company, and then we were developing our expertise and our market penetration in finance, and particularly in credit unions. So if you want to establish yourself with credit unions, you have to access a list, you have to start the outreach to them, get them to engage. And once those personas, those marketing personas, and they're a little bit different, they're custom, talk about members instead of customers, for example. So you take the information you might have been using for finance more generally and customize a marketing automation and a nurture for credit unions. So what we did there was we hired a couple of writers with the credit union experience and to create content that would be interesting. We created credit union specific benchmarks where we looked at the information specifically for their industry that would appeal to them and made that part of the outreach. We picked up our credit union case studies and said, here's what's going really, you know, here's what's going well, here's where we're doing well with it. And we built an automation, and then you want to have an event. Now, one of the problems when you start to segment is everything gets smaller. You know, you go from your 50,000 database to 2,000-3,000, you know, maybe 1,000 good contacts. And when you have an event, you have somewhat of an issue. You might have 10 or 15 or 20 reg, and that can be okay. And the way you can counterbalance that is to dial up the speakers, make sure you're using industry influencers, industry known speakers, that you're partnering with somebody who can help draw those people in when you do those real-time events. And, you know, authors in the space, you know, association leaders are often interesting people. They often have that group and social component, that community building component to what they do as part of their association. So you need to go out and find those people and build them and, you know, leverage their name recognition into your content, and then keep a regular feed. And keep in mind that penetrating a new industry is going to take a lot longer than your normal sales cycle. So if marketing would typically be nurturing for 6 months, when you enter a new industry where you're not as well established, where you don't have that name recognition or the as many case studies and use case references might take 12 or 18 months. So these are all long-term investments. You have to put a lot of effort in and be patient. Hey, Sunil, one more thing I want to talk about is how hard it is to get your marketing team to do nurture. So over the last, you know, couple of jobs, always a lot of pressure from the CEO to say, hey, Eric, you need to nurture more. You know, we've got some leads in there. You know, we need more yield from the database that we have. But there's, you know, there's often a reluctance, unless you hire a marketing automation nurture person, unless you have that as a full-time role, it's very difficult to get anybody else on your staff to do this as hybrid work. So what I recommend to people is to hire a contractor or hire a part-time person and just assign them not the entire work of doing nurture, just to build a nurture, because I find that tactical point of building out the email campaign is often where it gets stuck. It's not terribly difficult for me to figure out we need a five-touch nurture for this group. And I can do that as the strategist, as the CMO or the VP. But getting somebody to actually do that in a smaller group, if you've only got two or three people and they're omni-channel, I find that marketers look towards doing nurture like salespeople look towards actually making sales calls, actually making outbound calls. It's the thing they'd least like to do. So getting people and assigning it specifically to them, these two nurtures are yours, and then just keep adding part-time resources. I also find that people don't make much more than two nurtures a month, that there's a certain cadence that uses up their brain capacity, mental capacity to build nurtures. Like, I don't think anybody is going to build 10 in a month, but if you had five people, they could build two each. And then you have an architect or an editor bring these flows together somewhat, bring the logic together and the content. What do you think of that?
No, totally. But what you said is 100% true, which is, you know, giving this entire ownership to like one person or a team to do it as their full time. Like, I would even say, like, you know, if you have a database of upwards of 50,000 people, like, you know, hiring like at least one person full time to make sure they're engaged, and not just hiring, but also that person's KPI being very much in alignment with, you know, hey, how much, you know, you are nurturing. And I would, like, you know, put that nurture sequence, or, you know, put that the KPIs into three different buckets. One is like your active prospects. Like, if you generate a lead from like a ebook or a white paper or a webinar or whatever, and that's like one type of, or maybe you meet them at an event, that's like an active, you know, prospect list. The second would be the cold ones. Like, maybe you just got them and like you run some sequence program, like you give them to a BDR or an SDR to work on, and then they would run through all their sequences, and then they gone cold, and it's been like 90 or maybe let's say 60 days or 90 days, and they have not responded. So that's like a second bucket. Third would be like, you know, people, I'm really talking in, you know, in context of like B2B SaaS, and which is like, you know, upwards of, let's say, $8,000-$10,000 ACV particularly. And the third bucket would be like, you know, like your customers, right? Like, because you always have to keep them healthy, right? And it would be like, you know, a mixed job between like the marketing automation person plus the customer marketing person, but the marketing automation's KPI does depend on that, right? That they should keep the customers engaged as well. So like, yeah, three buckets, as I mentioned, and then, you know, each bucket has a very different objective on what they want to do. And this is like one of the programs that I've like also ran in the past, like where I was not the marketing automation person, but like, you know, we were essentially solving for, we did this at WhatFix, by the way, where we used to get a lot of inbound leads, and we used to like, you know, get a lot of leads from events and a lot of leads from webinars, and, you know, our lead database were very high in numbers, to be honest, but not everybody has seen a demo, right? So not every lead has seen a demo. And not every lead we would qualify as well, right? Like, there were a lot of good leads that actually ended up getting disqualified. But that doesn't mean that, you know, they should not see a demo. So how do we solve that? Because if we give them one-on-one demo, it would involve a lot of, you know, sales time, right? Like time from a account executive, which I don't want to waste on a, you know, sort of disqualified lead. But I don't know that if they're actually disqualified or not based on, like, you know, some premature or, you know, prerequisites or whatever. So we used to run a group demo program to nurture these kind of people, right? Like you come, like where every Thursday we're organizing a group demo across time zones, and it's listed on the website. And we used to, like, you know, marketing automation used to promote these to, like, different segments of people, obviously, like particularly to all the CRM users or particularly to all the HCM users or something like that. And then in that group demo as well, we used to keep it very personalized that maybe we are showing what fix on a CRM or what fix on an HCM and so on. And through that, we saw a lot of people who went cold because of the BDR outreach actually started getting, you know, reactivated. And they used to come and, like, you know, hey, this is something interesting and, you know, it does fit my use case. And maybe they ask a few questions during the group demo and, you know, I want a personalized demo now. Right. So I used to, like, that was like a program which worked. And the metric was like, we saw tangible revenue getting generated from this program. So what more do you want? So yeah, like, it is complex, but if ran correctly and with some thought put into it and with some, like, not some, but a lot of efforts, I think it does, like, will give you tangible results.
Yeah, definitely good stories and good lessons there. You mentioned having a customer marketer. And as much as obvious as that is in SaaS software, when you're in a subscription business, your marketing should really help your retention rate. You should be doing things that help that. But it tends to fall by the wayside. I tend to not have that headcount filled with a particular person. So let's think about the customer cohort in three ways. There's the onboarding phase, say the first third. There's the middle third where they're operating the platform, you know, they're using your product or service, and you want them to be as active as possible to get a lot of value in the middle. And I think that is the point at which most people drop off. So it's 6 months, they're sort of on their own. And then in the final 3 months, you start to have renewal alerts and you start to realize their contract might come up. So we should start sending them some invitations. We should start sending them some content. We should start doing value touches. We should start having the AEs or the account managers reach in there. And I think we'd be better off really thinking the onboarding is usually done. There's usually a lot of attention there and there's usually a lot on the renewal. I think marketing can play a big role in that middle 6 months in a 12-month contract to help create value, give examples, help drive their cadence, make them use the platform. Hey, you know, you want them even to log in just to remember their login and password to get onto your product. They should be using your product every week. If you see weeks go by with nobody logging into your product, you're going to have a danger on them getting perceived value when you go back for renewal. So a marketing campaign can cover use cases, cadence, best practices, benchmarks. A lot of people going back to your FOMO and your fear point. People don't want to be underperforming their colleagues. They want to be at market standard or better. Put out those benchmarks. Let them know what they should be doing with your product that other customers, that customers that get the most value are getting. Mm-hmm. Make sure that those customers have an ability to kind of contact you. Make sure your chat client has an experience that's appropriate for customers. Don't just think about your MarTech stack for your acquisition. Think about how does it support your reacquisition, which is cheaper and easier and probably a larger share of revenue. Your renewal should be a larger share of revenue after your $10 or $20 million revenue lines as a company.
Totally. And as you mentioned, right, like marketing does and can help because at the end, it's the job of, like, account managers and CSMs, right? Like customer success team would not want to have that happen because it could be like a nightmare to them that, like, you know, no customer is logging in or none of the user from this account is logging in. It's like a nightmare. So I'm sure that they would be the ones to capture or, you know, to identify when that happens or if that is happening. Working with the customer marketing team and the marketing automation team would then be, like, you know, the executioners of the entire plan that they create, right? So as I said, like, yeah, marketing automation does play like an important role, whether it's like, you know, at the top of the funnel or even mid funnel or, you know, even for your customers, right? Like so it does definitely cover like full cycle, like marketing in general. But
One of the things we have to remember as marketers is that we have to market to sales and CS. Like the campaign has to go to them, because while we can automate campaigns to say the customer base, it'll be much more effective if it comes person to person. So you can automate a campaign where the call to action is for them to essentially take this message and carry it to their customers. We have to remind them a lot. Everybody's busy. Everybody's got a big list of items that they have to do. And sometimes this manual nurturing doesn't make it up into anybody's top five of things. So marketing automation can help, but you have to activate the people to do nurture with you so that you combine those two effects of machine-based and human-based.
Totally, totally. With that note, let's move on to the next round of the episode, which is like the lightning round. So I'm going to ask you like three questions and you have to answer with whatever is on top of your head, as the lightning round, the name suggests. So yeah. Cool. So like first thing, what's the one thing that has helped you shorten your learning curve?
Studying. This being focused on becoming a subject matter expert, being hands-on, asking for the login and just going in and figuring things out, being deep on my numbers and, you know, running my own spreadsheets so that when I go to a meeting, you know, I know what I'm talking about.
Got it. And then on to the second one. So what do you know about your work now that you wish you would have known when you first started?
So I've only been in this job about 3 months. You know, there aren't too many surprises. The interview process was pretty transparent about what they needed. I think the biggest change and breakthrough that I now know is to break down the divisions. If you have divisions within the company, they're going to be divisive. You're not going to be as close as you could be. So think about them as additions. And what we did is we merged a group of marketing, accounts, customer, and sales into one group. It's the whole customer facing group. So we don't finger point and we don't blame each other for not doing things. We just think about it as up and down funnel, like we're talking about here, up and down the nurture funnel. So that's the biggest difference, is don't have divisions. It doesn't help do with collaboration.
Got it. And then the last one, like everybody talks about success, but you know, I want to learn from like, you know, everybody else's failures, because there's a lot of insight there. So what did your biggest professional failure teach you?
I think the things that have been the most disappointing are when the events don't have enough registration, or, you know, the event doesn't hit the impact. And that came down to enablement. So if I didn't think about marketing to my colleagues strongly enough, then they tended to not be able to respond, or the lack of if you didn't align with the division heads. If the division head wasn't interested and supporting the project, then the people in that group are certainly not going to be doing it. There's no way to hold your peers accountable if your division leaders aren't holding each other accountable by being aligned on the same goals. So that leads to a lot of effort and a lot of frustration. And I think it accelerates burnout when you try hard on a program and for lack of good interdepartmental or intergroup collaboration, you don't get that result. So those would be some of the biggest failures, where you have an event that you have to reschedule or you have to pay a cancellation fee. Those are big disappointments. Anytime you miss the number, anytime you have a target and marketing's identified as missing its top of funnel or its lead generation or MQL or SQL leads, those are disappointing. And what you can do is just make sure that if you've got bad news, that you're honest about it and that you bring countermeasures. As you move up in the organization, you can't go to executive meetings without solutions. So even in the middle levels, you know, it's fine to identify a problem to your boss, but you need to start thinking in terms of bringing ideas for solutions, things to try. People know that all the work is hard, particularly in a slow economy, but they want to see that you're not giving up. They want to see that you've got new ideas. And so I think my biggest failures were, I got frustrated with the organization. I said, okay, this is what happened. And I wanted that pressure to fall on another group. That didn't help me, but the pressure just fell back on me for not being clear on what I could do better to get them to do better. It always, self-accountability was always, anytime you don't do that, you look bad, you deliver a bad number, and then you look bad as a manager in front of, you know, the exec team or something.
Got it. The first point you mentioned, like, you know, making sure that the different functional leaders are also aligned on the same goal as you are on the underlying event, for example, and making, you know, account them accountable for their effort or their part that they're playing in this project. Because, you know, if you don't make them a part of the project, they're, you know, they're not going to care about it because they have their priorities. So that is like very underrated, but very impactful piece of advice, because I totally relate it. So yeah, that is interesting. But yeah, thanks a lot, Eric, for sharing all these insights with us about lead nurturing, and, you know, also about all the like insights from the lightning round. Very, very useful and very impactful.
Great to be with you today. Thanks for having me on.